Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. This is Leslie Dorries. You know, I find it really funny how the world works, because as I was preparing for today's show, I opened up my email and read a blog post by a previous guest, Vicki Larson, and in it she had a quote from The Matrix Revolution. And the quote is, "Love is a word. What matters is the connection the word implies." So, I just want you to stop and think a moment about, how often do you tell your spouse that you love them? How often do you hear it from them? The big question that I like to find out is, do you really feel the love? Do you feel the connection? Unfortunately, many of us don't. And that not feeling that love and connection from the person that we've are building our lives with, it makes me really, really sad. And I'm sad because most of you felt that love for each other once upon a time in your relationship. And I think that what happens is that everyday life and our fractured focus has gotten in the way of that wonderful, loving feeling. You're pulled this way and that with multiple responsibilities, and, you know, that loving connection just kind of seems to disappear. I hear it from my clients in, you know, that they've grown apart or that they have nothing in common, and, you know, their marriage is really, really struggling. So, you know, one of the things that I tell my clients and basically anybody else who listens to me is that nothing thrives on neglect. In your marriage, your relationship isn't any different. And even though it might take a little while for the neglect to show up, make no mistake, it will eventually make its presence felt. And for most of us, this neglect is completely unintentional, but it's still damaging. You know, I once killed a cactus by dehydration because I stopped noticing that it was there. And let me tell you, that was a really hard thing to do, but it happened. So, you know, if you're going to be talking to any marriage coach, marriage professional, relationship professional, what we'll all say to you is that the way to avoid this is simple. Date nights! Great! Continuing to date your spouse regularly is the antidote to neglect and feeling disconnected. You know, and I know we all have families, or some of us do, but we all have some other responsibilities, our jobs, our families, our friends. And making a date takes time, and sometimes it takes money, although not always, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that later. But dating your partner, dating your spouse, beats the alternative of letting your marriage die a slow and, in my opinion, preventable death. So to talk about what makes a great date night, I'm joined by Steve Perret. He's a fellow marriage coach. He's the founder of a great website called SpouseDates.com, and he's the author of Build a Better Marriage, One Date, that's date, at a time. He and his wife, Chrissy, have been married for over 20 years and have four great kids. So he's going to be an expert on what it takes to bring this all about. So, Steve, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to your audience, Leslie.
Well, so, I mean, you know, this is one of the things, and I don't know if you get this a lot, but it's like, I don't even have time to sit down and read a book. How am I supposed to have, you know, make time or find time to date my partner? What's your answer to that?
Well, I was just actually speaking with a friend at lunch today, and he gave me the perfect analogy. Many of us don't have time to change the oil in our car. But does that mean we don't do it? No. we have to do that in order for the car to continue to run. It's called preventative maintenance. Sure, we can neglect it, but you know, when we change the oil in the car, we don't notice any specific, you know, changes in the way the car runs. You know, it's not like there's this major boost in performance. What we do notice is if we don't do it, things will really deteriorate.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess that's one of the things that, that I struggle with, is, you know, people keep talking to me about, you know, it's all about the pain, but this is actually about pain avoidance. This is about not feeling the pain, and it's sort of like, well, how do we convince people that they should be changing the oil in their marriage, that they should be, you know, that, I mean, because I'm like this. It's like, you know, you maintain your car because you don't want to be left on the side of the road in the pouring rain someday.
Right.
But so what do what do you say to people to get them to go, you know, the proverbial slap upside the head, it's that easy?
Well, one of the things that I emphasize is, you know, some folks' concept of a date, they set the bar too high. It doesn't have to be 4 hours on a Friday night where you spend $50 and have to buy it, you know, pay for a babysitter. You have to take reality into consideration. And, you know, if you have young kids at home and you can't afford to go out or, you know, hire a babysitter, there are alternatives. The point is not the date. The point, like you were talking about earlier with that Matrix quote, is the connection. And to be flexible with your idea of what a date is will be very helpful.
Right. Well, that's because I think that's where people get stuck. And I want to tell my listeners that for me as a marriage coach, I have a specifically defined what it means to date. Now, again, it doesn't mean you ever have to leave your house. But for me, the purpose, there are two purposes of a date. One, you're having fun, and two, you're spending one-on-one time, quality time together. Those are my only two criteria for whether or not it's a date.
I would add one in there, and it has to do with intent, that it's on purpose, you know, that your intent is to connect at that point where you're having fun and spending time together. Now, of course, it can be spontaneous or it could be planned, but you know, I like to go back to the old-fashioned word, courting. And I think that's a critical ingredient in what makes a date a date. You know, oftentimes we think of dating as something that's a pre-marriage thing. You know, if we're dating someone to get to know them, kind of figure out if we want to spend our lives with them. But that shouldn't stop when we're married. And what the essence of that is, that shouldn't stop, is that courting, that pursuit, that continual wanting to get to know someone and connecting more and more deeply with them.
Right, and I see this happening all the time with people where I talk about their exchanges with their partners as informational exchanges. It's, you know, when are you coming home? Can you pick up, you know, the dry cleaning? Susie's got a soccer game at 3. Will you be there? I mean, you know, there's no real, you know, anything deeper than that. But if you're talking with somebody or if you're interacting with somebody for 15 or 20 minutes, you've gotten into, you know, why we're doing all of this, how you feel about what we're doing, you know. do we want Susie to be playing soccer, and what does that mean, you know? There's no way out of it but time.
That's absolutely true. It takes time. You know, I in this context, you know, there's something I remember when we were raising our kids that applies to this. You know, how do kids spell time or love? It's T-I-M-E.
And, right.
You know, we don't really grow out of that. We never grow out of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it goes back to that quote. How do we feel connected if we're not actually spending time together? And I want to go back to something about dating, you know, about the definition of a date, because I also make sure that, okay, when we're on a date, we aren't dissecting the relationship.
Right.
We're not talking about our finances. We're not talking about these things. We are having fun. Because it's like, oh yeah, let's go out to dinner on Thursday night and dissect the relationship. Oh gee, doesn't that sound wonderful? Yeah, I want to do that.
Right. Yeah, dating shouldn't feel like work. Not when you're on a date. Sometimes it is work to make it happen. Sure. I agree. It shouldn't feel like work when you're actually out on a date. It should be, you should be focused on each other and focused on having fun. And at the same time, you are working on your relationship. It's kind of one of those things where the benefit to your relationship is tremendous, but it doesn't really feel like you're working on it.
Right. Yeah, I always kind of take a little hiccup anytime I hear people talk about working on your marriage, because to me I live in the South, and to me it makes it sound like, well, let's go out on the and plow the back 40 in the 100 degree heat and 100% humidity. Yeah, woohoo! I want to do that, and you know I like to talk about intention and making an effort, which to me sounds a whole lot less horrible than work.
Right. Yeah.
Talk a little bit about. I'd love you to talk a little bit about the website Spouse Dates and why you created it and what people can get from it when they go there.
Okay. So I created Spouse Dates a little over a year ago as a website. I first started it as a Facebook page. Mm-hmm. Just throwing ideas about dates out there, see if folks were interested enough for me to continue to build it, and kind of see what value there was in promoting that as, you know, a marriage building experience. And it was well received, and I and my wife both really got on board with the idea and practice. So I built a website with the idea that it will develop into a community of folks who value dating their spouse and want to encourage each other to do that. One of the features I've been running for quite some time now is our Spouse Dates featured couple, where I do an email interview with different couples that's very positive oriented, with questions like, how did you first meet? What was your first date? What was your most memorable date? You know, tell us, you know, the best marriage advice you've ever heard. Just to really encourage folks that marriage with forward momentum, it's just a great thing. Like you were talking about earlier, nothing thrives on neglect. And it's very important to have a forward momentum in our relationship. And things like that, you know, these featured couples, different articles on the website, dating itself, help encourage that forward momentum in a positive way.
Right. Well, and I don't know if you can hear, I don't know if you can hear my listeners, but I got listeners going, yeah, I've got 3 kids under the age of 6, and I've got a full-time job, and my partner has a full-time job, and there's laundry and the dog, and you know, I go into the bathroom and suddenly, you know, I'm not alone, everybody wants me. So what's your best advice, other than going to your website, which I think is great, to these people who really like look at their lives and going, I don't have this time?
First thing I would encourage is to consider what I call a micro date.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, on my site, have a free ebook of 75 of those ideas.
Mm-hmm.
They're the kinds of things that don't take a lot of money or a lot of time, if any. But they're mm-hmm. the kind of things that if you inject them in your relationship, you know, it will provide the same kind of value as a regular date, just on a micro level.
So what can you give some suggestions about what a micro date, you know, what somebody might do on a micro date?
Absolutely. Actually, I'm going to pull up my list. So, for example, one could be while you're driving, just tenderly touch your spouse's cheek or hand, hold hands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to the idea of intention. You know, that it's just a little act that may be a little more than you would typically do with
mm-hmm.
the intent of connecting with your spouse.
Okay.
So something like that could be a micro date. Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're hanging out with your family, have your spouse sit on your lap or you sit on their lap. Just something that's a little beyond the norm that, you know,
I'm sorry. I'm laughing because I'm thinking about people who have teenagers, and you know, anytime my husband and I would hug or kiss, we'd get this "ew" kind of response from our teenagers. It's like, "Ew, don't do that."
and you know what? As much as they're expressing it that way,
mm-hmm.
I believe that down inside, it's appreciated. You know, that,
yeah,
they're seeing mom and dad love each other. That does something for kids, whether
yeah.
they're big or small.
Yeah.
To just reaffirm that they're in a secure place.
Right. We just look at them and go, yeah, too bad. Deal with it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to remind my listeners that this is Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning on webtalkradio.net, and I'm your host, Leslie Dorries. And to get more ideas about how you can create a happy, healthy marriage, go to www.afearlessmarriage.com. And we're talking with Steve Perret, founder of SpouseDates.com, about how to keep your marriage front and center in a fun and engaging way. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it is true that the kids will, you know, the kids might protest, but they're paying attention.
They are. They
you know.
They are.
And, you know, there were times when you know, my husband and I would go out on a date and we'd go to one of my son's favorite restaurants. And he, you know, he was always complaining. It's like, too bad. We're going to have a good time and you don't get to come with us. But you know, one of the things that I've run across, which again is, you know, is really so sad for me. I many years ago, I had a couple come into my office, and the baby was young enough to still be in the baby carrier, maybe 2-3 months old.
Okay.
And the woman looked at me and she said to me, "Don't tell me I have to spend less time with my child." And I just went, okay, I don't know what to say now.
Hmm.
You know, and we've got this incredibly child-centric society, because a lot of times when I talk to couples about how they spend their time, they're always talking about spending it as a family, which I think is great.
Sure.
But they're not spending yeah. any time as husband-wife.
And it's so critical. It's so critical because the kids, I mean, as far as them being in your home, they're going to come and go.
Right.
There's going to be that time for when the nest empties out. And when that time comes, it's going to be a big reveal for where you stand in your relationship with your spouse.
Right, which is unfortunately frequently what I see and what I so want married people to avoid. But it's almost like I don't know if it, I don't know. Do they not see it coming? Do they pretend it doesn't? It isn't coming. I'm not quite sure what's really going on there.
Yeah, you and me both.
I mean, other than being like this young woman who was like, well, it's all about my baby, and which, you know, and I'm a parent, you're a parent, so how did, and both of us have been married for a long time, so what did you and your wife do? How did you guys manage? You had four kids, I only had two.
Four, yeah.
So how have you guys managed through the years?
Well, I was given some very wise advice that I took to heart. And that was one of the best things I can do for my children is to love my wife, mm-hmm. to love their mother.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that one of the best ways to show your kids, you know, how mommy and daddy love each other is that they are committed to spending time together.
Mm-hmm.
To go, you know, date nights don't necessarily have to be bad for the kids,
right? Or even,
know,
or even away from the house.
True. Yeah. After the kids go to bed, you could mm-hmm. work something out to have a date at home. One of the things that we did when our kids were growing up is we would swap out with friends who had mm-hmm. kids of a similar age.
Right.
You know, you watch our kids while we go out, and then we'll watch your kids mm-hmm. while you go out. And the kids enjoy hanging out with their friends. And in our family situation, we had cousins around the same age, so we could do it with family as well,
right.
Or with grandma and grandpa.
Well, and I want to share, I mean, I had this when I was a teenager. So I was in seventh grade, and this is how, I'm not going to tell you how many years ago that was. But this was so memorable to me that it stuck. I went to a friend's house, and I'm going to tell all my listeners. This was before VCRs, now I'm really dating myself, DVRs, you know, computers, you name it. We had basically, you know, regular television with whatever 8-10 channels that you could get. And I was spending the night at her house, and I walk in the kitchen, and I look in the dining room, and you know the table is all set with, you know, tablecloth and candles and china and flowers, and I'm looking at my friend going, "Is it okay for me to be here?" And she goes, "Oh yeah, they do this every Friday night."
Oh,
and
wow.
And what they did, the mom would cook dinner, and it was, you know, she'd feed the girls. There were three of them. And they had to eat early, and then they were sent off to go entertain themselves while she and her husband had this romantic dinner in their house. I'm going, oh, my gosh, this is so – and when my kids were little, my husband and I did exactly the same thing. It was like, okay, by this time we had, you know, Disney movies, so it's like you guys go watch the movie. You can only come in the dining room if there's blood or fire, you know. You have to stay there till the movie's over. And so every Friday night, we had an hour to just
wow.
connect with each other.
That's awesome. I hear stories like that, and I realize how much of a beginner I still am.
But hey, you're working on it, though. I mean,
that's the thing. Yeah, I'm on a journey, and I've opened that journey up to have other folks join me on it, because
yeah.
It's such an important thing. And you know, even though I think my wife and I have a really good thing going, there's a ways to go. So we're a work in progress, and this dating thing sure is helping.
Well, because, you know, I mean, and I'm not the same person that I was when I married my husband. I mean, you know, on some level I am, but my interests have changed. I've learned new things. I like different things. You know, it's not that I don't like doing the same kind of stuff that we did when we were dating, but, you know, we have experiences that happen to us that, you know, that change us. And if we don't share them with our partners, then I think we're kind of stunted. At least our relationships are.
Sure. People change, and they don't tell you about it, unless you're intentional about it, you know?
Right.
You know, our interests and desires shift as time goes by, and it's so important to stay current with our spouse. And if you take that whole chunk of child rearing years and you're not staying current with your spouse, mm-hmm. when that nest is empty, you're not going to know each other. And there's no need for that.
Well, and it's also interesting, you're bringing up the children, and it jogged something for me that it was a conversation that my husband and I had around our son, because my son's my oldest, when he was, you know, thinking about going to college. And my husband and I had very different experiences in college that, you know, on some level we never really talked about because they weren't relevant. But when it was coming time for him to go to college, they became really relevant. And so even though, you know, and so we were able to have dialogue around our you know, differing viewpoints about what we were hoping for him and all this other stuff. And I think it's because we'd been able to stay connected throughout the years, we could actually have that conversation.
And you make a really good point. You know, there are mysteries hidden within us, you know, that as we go through our journey, there'll be triggers, and we can share those with each other that what you said is a perfect example of that. But we'll only have the opportunity to share those with each other if we're together.
Right. And one of the best things, and I know you'll agree with me about this, is that if we're intentionally engaging with our partner on a regular basis, when there is a problem, we aren't scared to engage with our partners.
Right.
Because we still have that foundation.
Exactly. It is a strong foundation to work with. And you're not afraid that if we address this, everything's going to fall apart, because you have history right. enough to know that it's not. We're not going to let it fall apart.
So what would your suggestion be for somebody, you know, for somebody who's, you know, maybe been married a couple of years, 5 years, 10 years, however long they've been married, and they haven't been consciously dating each other, what would be a suggestion for a good place, you know, for a place to start?
Start small. Something okay. that, first of all, think about what's within your comfort zone. You know, what would you mm-hmm. be comfortable doing? Mm-hmm. And then go just a little bit beyond that. Mm-hmm. To where you're stretching yourself somewhat, you know, whether that's, you know, doing dinner at home and shooing the kids out of the room, that mm-hmm. might be a little of a stretch for some folks.
Right.
You know, whatever that looks like is going to be different for folks, you know, for different people.
Or going out on a romantic date, you know,
yeah,
could be too much of a stretch for some people right now.
True. Yep. Yep. The point is to do something.
Uh-huh.
Almost to the point of doing anything, to where
right.
you get some forward momentum.
Uh-huh.
And you're able to, unlike changing the oil in a car, when you date your spouse, there is a kind of a reward. You know, there is a sense
right.
of something's better here. This is good.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, once you have a few successful dates under your belt, there's going to be some momentum, and it won't be so hard to do the next one. And I would encourage folks to find other people who are pointing in that same direction. Because if you're all by yourself, it can be really challenging to...
Right.
To kind it of can be a little,
it can be a little... Yeah, it can be a little scary to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the things... Double dating?
Absolutely. That was what I was going to say. I think double dating is an awesome thing for couples to do.
Right.
In a number of ways. One, there's opportunity for you to interact with your spouse in ways that you might not otherwise interact with them, you know,
mm-hmm.
just like you were talking about with your son going to evaluating different colleges, you know, maybe this other couple is going to bring up a topic that you would never have thought to talk about with your wife, but she has all kinds of stuff to say about it. I love it when that happens. But it's like, wow, I didn't know that, and I never would have thought to ask that.
Right. Yeah, it's like, I've known you for 20-plus years. How did I never know that? Well, because it just kind of never, it wasn't that it was being hidden. It was just kind of, it just never got triggered. And and then you get to find out something new and exciting and different about your partner. And as we all know, new is what keeps, you know, keeps those endorphins flowing.
Yeah,
one of the things that I really want my listeners to know, because this is something that I recommend, is I have I suggest to couples that they create a date jar so that if somebody sees something or likes to do something, that they just kind of write it down and stick it in the date jar, so that when they're trying to think of a date, it's like, I don't have to think of it. I just go to the date jar and I pull something out, and it's like, oh, this sounds like fun.
Oh, that's an awesome idea.
You
I'm
know,
to kind of
feel free. You know, because you know, I mean, so how often, just out of curiosity, how often do you think couples should date?
I think that there should be a date of some sort, even the micro date, at least once a week.
Mm-hmm.
But a date that's kind of like a date with a big D once a month.
Okay. Okay, so that gives kind of a way of looking at it, a goal to shoot for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A goal that we're shooting for is to do that, and on a quarterly basis, do like an overnight type of thing.
Yeah.
Now that our kids are older, it's not difficult to do. But.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it's again, I want to you know, stress that what you said, and I agree with, is start small.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get freaked out because, oh, I have to plan this big thing, this big awesome date. It's like start small. Start, you know, kind of like we did when we first met.
That's
right. Most of the time those were kind of small. We, you know, mm-hmm. as getting to know each other kind of thing, right?
That's a great analogy. That's perfect.
Okay. So Steve, can you remind my listeners again where they can find you and the 75 micro dates, and so they can actually, I'm going to tell all my listeners, get out your calendars and sit down and pick a day that you're going to, try to have a date with your partner, and then where can they find you to get some ideas for those dates?
So the website's going to be the best spot, and that's www.spousedates.com/welcome. That's the page where you'll be able to download the free 75 micro dates. And then any other page on the site has other ideas, but that's where I would start.
Okay. Well, Steve, I want to thank you so much for sharing your site and sharing your information, and listeners, It's not as scary as you think. It really can be fun. And if you can kind of take this idea of, oh, what kind of fun things can my partner and I do to reconnect, you'll be well on your way to having a great marriage. So I want to thank you for listening to Happily Ever After is Just the Beginning. And I invite you to join me next time when Elisa Bowman, the author of Project Happily Ever After, is my guest, and she's going to share what went into her decision to make her marriage better and how she did it. So until next week, stay loving.